The gospel reading for this morning is taken from the book of John, chapter 9, verses 1 to 7. As he went along, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus said, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. "Go," he told him, "go wash in the pool of Siloam." This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. This is the witness of the good news of Jesus Christ. Thanks be to God. So our sermon this morning is going to talk about Psalm 23 and about this reading from the book of John. So I invite you to settle your hearts and your minds and listen to the message. When I was in my teens, I did quite a bit of canoe tripping. On one such trip down the Des Moines River in northern Quebec, I dumped my canoe running a set of rapids. The water was moving fast and was turbulent, with plenty of rocks. I avoided most, but hit one and wrapped my arms lovingly around it. That rock and I, we communed for a while. I have never been so profoundly grateful for God's creation as I was for that rock. There was safety there and shelter. I knew that rock intimately in the time we were together. I would not, or perhaps could not, let that rock go. It was my only refuge from being swept down the rapids. I held on to that rock for what seemed like an eternity, which lasted probably no more than half an hour before I was rescued. In my time with that rock on that river, Psalm 23, one of the readings for this morning that we heard Charlie sing, went through my head. How I envied that man his geography. I would have traded that river for the valley any day. I thought of the lines, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I fear no evil, for thou art with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." This man is obviously utterly alone. There is no one else at that table. There is no one else in that valley, beside that still water, or lying in that green pasture. Yet this is not a psalm of desolation or of loneliness. There is strength here, and trust here, and certitude, and a measure of peace. The psalmist is stating loud and clear in some of the most beautifully put together prose that God is the only necessity. When push comes to shove, when we are at our lowest or feel our most alone, God is with us. This is bedrock. This is foundation. A rock in a river, still water, green pasture. In this intensely personal articulation of faith, there is soul food and comfort food and enough of both. And there is more here. The second last line of the psalm, "Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life." This is a familiar line. Most translations suggest that God's goodness will follow the psalmist. Yet this word "follow" is actually from the Hebrew word "radap" and carries with it a sense of pursuit. A sense of urgency. Surely goodness and mercy will pursue me all the days of my life. There is a sense of continuity. This pursuit will continue. There in that valley, the psalmist has been caught. God is with him. He does see. He does not want. There has been what theologians call a breaking in of goodness and mercy by goodness and mercy. God is the only necessity. This is not a one-time thing. It is the rare person that lives without doubt all their days. Goodness and mercy will continue to pursue the psalmist the day he climbs out of the valley, and the day after that, and the day after that, and today. I read the paper yesterday and scrolled through the news sites, as I am sure we are all doing, and I took in the latest figures about the deaths and the diagnoses and the prognoses around this coronavirus, and I thought of the present imposed isolation, much like the isolation of the one walking in the valley in the psalm. And so I wanted, and so I want each of us to have that psalmist's strength and trust and certitude and measure of peace. But first we must lament. First our hearts must break. Reading of the mounting death toll as this virus continues to make its way around the world, reading of decisions as to who gets a ventilator in Italy, reading of the beachgoers still at the beach in droves in Florida, reading of the hoarding and stockpiling by our fellow citizens, reading of the casting of blame on others, or reading of the denying of the existence of the pandemic at all. A lot of things broke my heart, and I imagine yours as well. And we cannot help but lament, lament out of our fear. First, our hearts must break, and then our vision may clear. In this very long passage from the Gospel of John, we hear again in a very old story about sin as a moral category of behavior. We hear first the story of Jesus curing the blind man. The miracle is told in a very few verses. Jesus picked up the mud, mixed it with spittle, and opened the beggar's eyes. It is the story that follows, the story that is woven around the cure that John wants us to hear and to see. John is preaching. And what he is preaching about is the nature of sin in general, and spiritual blindness in particular, about the offer of sight and the consequences of its rejection. He is using a story from the life of Jesus and connecting it with the experience of his community, sometime at the end of the first century after Jesus died. It was about this time that the followers of Jesus began to be not welcome in the temple, a time when divisions as to beliefs led to mutual rejection. As any good narrator will do, he is showing what he wants to tell. He is collapsing time so that the blind man's encounter with Jesus is made contemporaneous with the troubles of his own community. In trying to make sense of one of the tough questions of all ages, why there is disease, why bad things happen, one of the ways of making sense of the world was to relate illness with sin. The notion that a parent's sins are visited on the children was seen as a cause for suffering. We hear in John's Gospel of how Jesus, without any knowledge of genetics or viruses or environmental factors, turns that notion on its head, completely rejects this idea. To John, sin is not a moral category about behavior, but a theological category about one's response to suffering, one's response to the offer of God, the offer of spiritual insight. The sin is the rejection or the denial of this offer. In more modern parlance, the sin is the action or inaction that causes us to be alienated from God. Our reaction to this coronavirus and our consequent actions, both corporate and individual, are sinful or not. Following the rules or not. Reaching out to one another or not. Admitting finally, without qualification, our interconnectedness and our interdependence, or not. My sons used to play a game with an octogenarian friend they called Uncle Danny. Whenever they were together, they played a sort of modified version of tag. They would hide and jump out at one another in unexpected moments, usually for some reason around the washroom door, and they would yell, "Gotcha!" Invariably, both parties dissolved in giggles, with Uncle Danny giggling the loudest. In that moment, before the yell, before the gotcha, there was a moment when they recognized that the yell is to come, and they recognized the presence of one another. Who was not there a moment ago now was. What was not there a moment ago now is. This sense of pursuit and its corresponding recognition, this gotcha moment, is found in the Gospel of John we heard today. The beggar sees, both physically and spiritually. In this time, goodness and mercy have pursued him and have caught him. God is the only necessity. John is speaking of transformation from blindness to sight, from ignorance to knowledge, from pursuit to recognition, and the joyous exclamation of gotcha. So where does this, if you'll excuse the grammar, where does this being got take us? Jesus provides the answer and the urgency. As long as it is day, we must do the work of the one who sent me. And what is that work? Letting your heart break. Letting yourself be got. Letting your vision clear in that order. I want to share with you a poem for this time, and it's by Alin Unger. It's entitled Pandemic. Listen to these words. What if you thought of it as the Jews consider the Sabbath, the most sacred of times? Cease from travel, cease from buying and selling, give up just for now on trying to make the world different than it is. Sing, pray, touch only those to whom you commit your life. Center down. And when your body has become still, reach out with your heart. Know that we are connected in ways that are terrifying and beautiful. You could hardly deny it now. Know that our lives are in one another's hands. Surely that has become clear. Do not reach out your hands. Reach out your heart. Reach out your words. Reach out all the tendrils of compassion that move invisibly where we cannot touch. Promise this world your love, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, as long as we all shall live. In this day and this time, being got invites that we proclaim and we participate together from a distance. Being got invites us to see a new perspective on this business of living, gives us the strength and the will to discern the meaning and the purpose of this light, life. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. And he also said to those who would hear, you are the light of the world. We heard in Ephesians this morning, live as children of light. Pascal said, by space, the universe encompasses and swallows me as an atom. By thought, I encompass the universe. Let your light shine. Live as children of light. Let that light catch you to mend your broken heart, to fix your vision, to know God is with you as we walk through this valley together. Amen.